In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow. There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since Jan 21, the cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the house of cards will come crashing down. A presidential election year that'll have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text STRANGE to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. Just text STRANGE to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
Welcome once again to Strange Planet. So nice to have you here. Thanks for sticking me in your ear, so to speak. We are going to delve into a fascinating area, the Akashic Record. And Adam Gell is with us. He's going to discuss his journey and exploration into his own ancestry through the Akashic Records, past life regression, where he learned that his present medical condition, his phobia of doctors, and his distaste of striped clothing. Well, I'm going to leave it right there. He'll explain that in just a few moments. Adam is a retired high school physical education teacher working in the public school system for 30 years. He also worked as a landscape photographer, writer, documentary filmmaker. Currently, he hosts his own podcast and works as a Reiki practitioner and mentor. And you can learn more about Adam at his website, AdamGellUniverseHealing.com, and we've also linked up to that website in the episode notes for this podcast episode. Adam Gell, welcome. How are you?
Okay, nice to be here. Thank you very, very much for inviting me to this program.
So the Akashic Record, this compendium, I guess, of every word, every thought, every memory of every living entity on this planet. Tell me more about it. Where is it? How do we access it? What is it? What is its purpose?
Yeah. Okay. Well, the Akashic Records is a energy field which gives us the opportunity as a human being to get in contact with our soul's plan, our soul's purpose, and the ability for us to actually find the challenges that we're going through and look at them actually as stepping stones in actually evolving. So the Akashic Records is in Sanskrit is one of the elements. It's the space between space. Like you have air, fire, water, and that space, as Einstein and scientists like Irvin Laszlo found out, there's a particular field which is the records the speech, our thoughts, our words, our deeds in this energy field. And it's accessible by us as human beings, and it's one of the tools that's necessary if a person is interested in actually finding out their soul's journey and what they're supposed to be doing in this life.
I sort of think of it as the great library in Alexandria, where, you know, if you were to walk into that library, and there would be stacks and stacks of scrolls, and every human that has ever lived, or that is living, or will ever live, there's a scroll for that person. So you could reach, and if you were to locate it somehow through a index or something, you would find your scroll, and it's all right there. How did it get there?
Well, I believe in biblical words, the Book of Life is a recording of the deeds and actions of each person. So in terms of going back in the past, we can get an idea of this from historical purposes. In terms of the Mayan people, the culture that actually has a specific prayer which makes it accessible for a person to actually to get in contact with one's own Akashic Records, is one of the ways or tools to get this information.
Edgar Cayce, the great sleeping prophet, it was said that you know, he would do all of these readings while he was in this kind of a deep quantum meditative state, and he would do these incredible medical readings of people. Was he accessing the Akashic Record in order to do that?
Yeah, from my understanding, he was in the Akashic field accessing this information. I mean, each person who has this ability uses a different method. His method was a sleeping prophet. He would, you know, sleep and receive information, I guess, as a download while his mind was in a meditative state and sleep. In terms of a person accessing the Akashic Records other than Edgar Cayce, there, as I just mentioned before, a person doesn't have to be sleeping in order to get into this type of field. But Edgar Cayce was using the Akashic field to gain access and information to pass on to his clients. So, yeah.
And so for you, Adam, personally, how did you first access or encounter the Akashic Record? What was your first experience?
Yeah, well, for me, it was a dark night of the soul. I was going through a medical issue. I was at work. I was looking at the vents at my school building where the heat was coming out, and in my gym, which is about 20 to 30 feet above my head. And every time I looked up, I would get somewhat of a panic attack, and I'd have a tough time breathing. I did have a little asthma, but it would be exasperated by me looking at this particular scene or something that was bringing this on. So as I was suffering from my asthma, there was a coworker who had saw a healer. At the time, I didn't know in terms of what a healer was, but she told me, why don't you give him a call? So I gave him a call, and I told him, you know, I didn't actually tell him anything. He said, you have asthma. And he told me, why don't you come in? So as I was visiting him off and on, he was helping me out, but he was seeing a past life of mine in Germany. He was seeing me in World War II somehow, and I didn't have a connection to any of this past life stuff or any interest in it. But as I visited him more often, I was opening myself up to the spiritual realm and having a deeper connection with accessing, I guess, my own psychic abilities. And then one thing would turn into the next, and I started to read a book on the Akashic Records. And there was an author by the name of Gabrielle Orr who wrote a book on it called One True Love, which I read. And after I read it, I said, you know what, maybe I'll get a reading. And sure enough, after having a reading from her, she told me, because I had lived in Germany in 1987, and I spoke German fluent within 5 months, and I always had a deep interest in World War II. So she said, you know, I see you actually being fluent in German. And I said, I am. And she said, you know, you had a past life in Germany. And she said, many of your medical conditions that you're feeling actually come from actually being a doctor in the concentration camps and having witnessed and saw what you saw and having to, you know, in terms of the gas chambers and all that. And I was perplexed, but also moved, because there was some unconscious remnants of me feeling what she was saying. And having had that particular reading, I also had a deep fear of going to doctors. So I had mentioned that to her, and she said, well, the records present the fact that you are a doctor yourself, and because you didn't want to do what you were doing and had, you were forced into this position, you mistrust doctors. And so one thing led me to another to then continue on the path. And as I was going actually to a psychic workshop, one of the girls who was in the class, they had burnt incense. And I told the person who was doing it if they could put it out. And the girl next to me said, it's not from this life, the smoke that bothers you. It's from the past life.
The smoke from the gas chamber?
I would assume that's what it was, yeah. Because there was smoke filled with incense, but it was a remnant from that past life. And this person who was next to me was able to actually read that and say, this wasn't from the life now that the smoke is bothering you. It's the smoke from the concentration camps, yes.
And your anxiety, your panic attacks by looking at the vents again related to the gas chamber?
It almost felt like a trapped energy or a trapped memory that was brought up by that particular vision or sight. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, on the as you first introduced me, you spoke about striped clothing. I always had a distaste for any type of clothing that had lines going down. In a vertical way. I couldn't wear any pajamas. I couldn't wear clothes like that or any type of shirt. So yeah, it started back in school, and in terms of the Akashic Records itself, one thing led me to another to then learn how to read them for myself. And then I did readings on myself as well, and I found out that I heard the word Berlin, that I was from Berlin before the war. And then as I progressed doing healing for people, one of the clients that I was working on, after the session was over, she got up and she said, wait a minute, I remember you from the concentration camps.
Wow.
And I was taken back, but I obviously, having had the readings prior to this and the memory of it, it wasn't that shocking to me. But what was shocking was when on a podcast, when I interviewed two people, and at the end of the interview, they said, I have somebody that I think will know you. And I got an email or a text from a woman who says, I remember you from Auschwitz, from a past life.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, and she said, you took me off the line and saved me. You helped me deliver babies in the camp. And I did a drawing, like a remote viewing drawing of a memory of a white building. And that white building was one of the buildings that is the only white building that is in Auschwitz. And she said, she remembers that as well. So this whole remnant, this whole memory, while it was painful and it was something difficult to go through, somehow actually opened me up to a greater level of consciousness and also to a greater level of healing, a personal healing for myself, emotionally and physically. And some of the physical symptoms just dropped off, which was very interesting for me.
You also had childhood trauma.
Yeah, I had childhood trauma. In terms of growing up in my house, I had a father who was, you know, he suffered he was a child from World War II. He was a refugee that came here from Russia initially, but traveled through different organizations, Jewish organizations that snuck him and his family and other family members through the different borders to get them to displaced persons camps in Germany. And then eventually he to America, but his whole feeling of not belonging, of whether it was that trauma itself, which it was, as well as his work traumas. He'd come home very frustrated, and I felt like what I was yearning for was a father who I could have conversation with, who I could learn something with, but he wasn't really present, and became, you know, off and on physical at different times. But, you know, we wound up patching things up, and I actually learned so much from what took place in my film, which I guess maybe we'll talk about later on.
Yes, we will. Forgotten. So, I mean, here you are. You were a physical education teacher for 30 years. You were a college athlete.
Yeah, baseball.
When I, you know, you've got that wonderful Brooklyn accent. When I hear people, you know, when I think of people in New York, I think salt of the earth, you know, just no airs. I am what you see. And this is what you get. I don't equate when, you know, I'm sure many people have told you this, but when I'm meeting you now, I do not equate this, you know, gym teacher, college athlete from Brooklyn as being into, you know, this whole healing journey and the Akashic record. I don't know, how do you respond to that? I'm sure people have told you that before.
Yeah, well, I think our physical body is a suitcase that's housing our soul. So I believe the soul's journey is using the body as a tool for its growth. And for me, I'm a very complex individual who had a background from grandparents who came from Europe, and I had a big diversity and a big interest in all different areas of life. In terms of, I would say the trauma and recognizing my trauma was one of the impetuses for me actually going inward rather than outward. I thought that the true happiness did not come from the outside world, but it came from the inner world, inner peace. And I believe that the experiences I had, the traumas like I had and other people go through, are the actual motivation, so to speak, to get us moving forward. So I guess my physical body, I'm very athletic. I've done photography. I've played baseball, college baseball. I play ice hockey, and I keep myself in that particular state of mind. But the other state of mind is always my deep interest in seeking information and growing and learning about everything. And I think that, you know, when you go through trauma, you could either turn it against other people, or you could turn it inward and actually grow from it and learn from it. And I think that's what I've used this as. So I don't think the physical body, I don't think the suitcase that we carry is a complete indicator of who we actually are on a soul level. I think our soul is going through a journey, and it needs the physical body to either fit in different situations, so to speak. So growing up in Brooklyn as a child, it was about being athletic. It was about being tough in the neighborhood. But for me, it was also about learning about my ancestors and learning about my family and learning about the traumas that my father experienced or my mother experienced, and trying to learn from them and understand why this happened. So I went on an inward journey to find these truths, I'd say.
Can you tell me about how one accesses the Akashic record? I mean, I know there are different ways, and we mentioned Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, and he did kind of a quantum meditative state. That's why he was called the sleeping prophet. How does it work for you?
Well, there's a specific prayer that I say for myself. It's a Mayan prayer that was passed down to someone in Spanish, and then it was translated into English. In terms of one accessing the Akashic records like myself, I use a specific prayer that puts your mind, not in a meditative state, but shifts the chakra energy from the seventh chakra into the eighth chakra, which is about 12 inches above your head. And that energy gives you the ability through the prayer to either see holographic images like I see, or hear certain things when a person is asking me questions on behalf of themselves, or when I'm doing the readings for my own information. So the prayer itself is a energetic prayer that shifts one's own energy to a place where then they're able to actually, the mind calms, the body calms, and the information comes through.
Such a remarkable gift. I can't imagine that would just come easy. Like, how do you How do you get to that level? I mean, you don't just recite the prayer and all of a sudden you're there and you're That's getting true. These holographic images. How long did it take to work up to that ability?
Well, I'd say the longer you do it, the easier it becomes. The information flows a little bit easier. And I would say that the biggest roadblock is self-doubt. If you doubt the information that you're hearing or the information that's getting in coming to you by blocking with the ego or logical thinking, then it becomes more difficult. But when you become, I think, open to the universe and the information that is being presented to us, and the subtle voices or energy that comes through, then I think you're able to do that. I think trusting the information is one of the big things, and not being like in conflict with yourself. In other words, ego versus intuition. I think being opening up to intuition is one of the things. I think keeping your chakras open, all seven or eight chakras of the body, in terms of being able to clear out the energy and to be able to have an open mind and an open heart. I think not everybody sees or hears the information, but certainly accessing the Akashic Records for oneself will put a person's energy into a much healthier place. And the energy will flow in, and we just accessing it brings information to the body that can be of assistance.
Adam Gell is with us, and we are discussing the Akashic Record. AdamGellUniverseHealing.com, the website. We'll come back in a moment and talk about his documentary, Forgotten, right here on Strange Planet. Don't go away.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. We're now crossing a zone of turbulence. Please return your seats and food trays to their upright position and make sure your carry-on luggage is safely stowed. You're about to leave everything you know behind. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Strange Planet.
And we are here with Adam Gell, retired high school phys ed teacher, working in the public school system for 30 years, worked as a landscape photographer, writer, documentary filmmaker, and now hosts his own podcast and works as a Reiki practitioner and mentor. The podcast, give us the particulars, Adam. How do we listen?
I'm on YouTube. It's called Conversations with Adam Gell and Inspiring Minds. I look to interview people who enlighten and inspire people with subjects or careers that they take part in. Basically, I like to interview people on UFOs and near-death experiences, people who have some type of input into the afterlife of what exists after this particular life we live in. And you can catch me on YouTube.
Is there a connection? Can we connect dots between, you mentioned the UFO phenomenon, near-death experiences, past lives? Are they all somehow intertwined and connected?
I believe in terms of past lives, I mean, I think we've played the role of all different types of beings, entities, and I think that we have had connections with people from different planets and other races, in terms of alien races in particular. In terms of my interactions with shamanic people, I'm a shamanic practitioner. Many of the people that I've spoken to speak about having encounters with aliens in the mountains in Ecuador and so on and so forth. So I think that it's all tied together. It's part of the universe's message of us trying to find our home, of where we come from, of what we're really made of and what we're supposed to be doing. So I think the connection between other universes, other galaxies, and other life forms are all part of it. In terms of me doing Akashic Record readings, I've heard information that was passed on and confirmed with other people of different planets. For example, I did a reading for about Saturn, the rings of Saturn, and I had received information that there was the Ashtar Command, which is a command part of a group of a galactic force, so to speak. One of the women I interviewed, Angela Thompson-Smith, who runs IRVA, which she's one of the, founders. Well, not founders. She's part of IRVA, the International Remote Viewing Association. I had spoken to her about it, and she told me that, yes, she said, that's what I heard also, that in Saturn, the rings of Saturn is where they come from. So it was interesting to actually have something confirmed on some of the things and the information that I heard. So there is a connection, obviously, not just to this plane, but to things beyond.
You mentioned remote viewing. Is that what remote viewers actually are doing? They are accessing the Akashic Record. Is that what psychics, clairvoyants, and mediums are also doing? They're all accessing the Akashic Record.
You know, I can't say exactly, I can't answer that exactly. There are different ways of that they're doing that. Yes, I think in some capacity, yes. In terms of the Akashic Records, what's really happening is that many times as a client comes to ask questions, they want yes or no answers. Will I be dating this person? Will I be, you know, earning this amount of money? And those are ego-based questions. The Akashic Records itself is actually an energy where it's actually guiding the person towards their soul's journey. So in other words, what do they need to do to earn more money? What do they need to do to actually have a better partner in their life? And it gives the tools and it gives the information on what they can do to actually fulfill the goals that they have, whether it be financial health or any type of area of their life.
Is your future written in the Akashic Records?
Well, your future is presented by the present moment. So we have free will to change things that take place in the future. So in our present thoughts, our present speech will dictate what will manifest as the future comes about. So, I mean, certain things I would say, I mean, I've watched a lot of different interviews and heard a lot of people speak about the Akashic Records that it's you have free will, but you don't have too much free will. But in terms of in terms of the information that a person is finding with the Akashic Records, it's not written in stone. Nothing is written in stone. We have the opportunity to change or to manifest what we want, first of all, by visualizations or by speaking words and changing things.
Are all of your previous lives documented in the Akashic Record?
Yes, they are. Uh-huh. Yeah. Not everyone will come through. If I'm doing a reading for someone, the most probably profound and most recent one, or the particular energy that will come through will represent what a person needs to do or shift in their life. For example, I had a friend who I did a reading for, and I saw him as a gladiator, and then I saw him actually speaking in front of a large audience. This was about 4 years ago, and now he's speaking in front of a large audience, and he's somewhat of like a gladiator type of personality that he's become. And so you can say that, you know, referring back to the past question, did he manifest this particular, you know, behavior or this type of situation that's taking place now? Maybe to some extent because of the work he was doing, I guess his destiny of pursuing this. So I would say that, you can shift and you could make subtle changes, but I think a lot of it is there. The information is there for a person.
So when you're healing someone or helping them to heal themselves, I've talked to a number of past life regression therapists and who say that all of your present aches or pains or illnesses are connected to a past life trauma. Is that what you're, are you walking them through or help guiding them through a past life and healing them by reliving or re-experiencing that past life, whatever trauma was caused previously?
Well, if I refer to myself in terms of better understanding the asthma that I went through and never having had a reading, I wouldn't have understood the particular past life connection. So I think that a person would first have to have some connection to it in this particular life in order for it to have some significance for them to want to go back to the past in order to solve it, because otherwise it'd be just an empty thought and a person wouldn't have a connection to anything. And I think people who are on this path would then be looking for a person who can read their records and give them insight into what is actually assisting or harming them in this life that they need to work on. So if I look at myself, I think this was in the remnants of fear of doctors, wearing certain clothing, looking at a vent. Were all signs for me to recognize a life that I didn't have a chance maybe to resolve. And so I think that we do carry these under the surface, these remnants. And I think they're so important for us to actually work through, because sometimes people have phobias and fears that have no connection to this life. People are afraid to go in the water, they're afraid to swim, and they don't know why. And they leave it at that. You know, they say, I'm not going in the water, or I'm not going into open spaces, or I'm not leaving home, I don't want to go on vacation. But if I think we, if we look back or we get a reading and a person is able to get the information, if the information is presented, then it actually makes a breakthrough and helps to assist the person in the present life. So I think it's a wonderful tool for that.
Have you assisted in someone reliving a past life and reliving a past trauma, and the end result was they overcame that?
Yeah, well, trauma. Yes. So for example, a person wasn't able to spend money and didn't understand why they weren't able to give their money away. They just were hoarding the money, holding on to it. And in a past life, I saw them actually as a beggar, and having the fear of not being able to support themselves, or actually to survive. So they're actually in that past life of survival. It had nothing to do with the present life. And actually me seeing the image of the person begging in the streets of Ireland, maybe in like in the 1600s. And what happened was this person had a reading from someone else, and it confirmed the same exact information that came through. So it confirmed that. So it actually helped the person to resolve the present moment of not realizing that the present moment was not really the issue. It was a past memory.
When you experience a past life, what is it like for you? Is it, you mentioned, you know, seeing holographic images, but is it like being in a movie, or are you just, or is it more like looking at snapshots?
If I'm doing a reading for myself, or if I'm doing a reading for someone else, I see snapshots, I see pictures, I see like an image, like maybe, you know, little pictures of what's going on, just one shot, or like a download of information that will come through.
And how about for you?
For myself, it's a little bit different. And I think when we do readings for ourselves in general, I think our ego gets in the way, because we question what we hear. Mainly the desire for a specific outcome is one of the factors that gets in the way of us accessing the information. But for myself, if I'm in a more relaxed state, and when I am in the Akashic Records, I am in a relaxed state, information does flow a little bit easier. So I usually take notes, or I'll write and I'll hear. And so then I will get information that is pertinent, because if I confirm it with someone else, then it shows me that I'm on the same page.
Can you share another past incarnation that you had?
Yeah, actually, recently, which is interesting, I am very interested in Native Americans, and I'm very interested in shamanic work. And recently I had a healing done by someone who is connected to a Native American grandfather and also a healer herself. And I've always collected feathers. I've done shamanic work, and I've had a connection somehow to, I saw something, the Lakota Indian tribe of North Dakota kept coming through. Everywhere I went, I would read a book. I told my girlfriend when she was in Manhattan in the Native American Library, just do me a favor, see if you can get a book. She says, there's a book, and she opens it up. It says, The Lakota Indians. Or a guy was swimming in the ocean. He had a tattoo, and it said, The Lakota Indian. And this woman who did the healing is the grandfather's from Lakota Indian. And I happen to have, she said to me, you know, you're in one of your past lives, you were connected to the Lakota Indians. And I felt that way. I was in Arizona, even though that's not where they were. I felt a deep connection to the Native Americans and the work that I'm actually doing now, which is shamanic work. So I would say the remnants, you know, if we pay attention to the synchronicities of life, of the things that pass us in a subtle way, numbers, whatever it may be, you know, certain animals or objects, if we pay attention, then there, and we take note of it, I think it has the ability to awaken us. So in my experience, or actually what happened with me was that the woman told me, she said, you know, I never take out this feather, but I was told to take out this Indian feather because the grandfather said that he wanted you to see it or show it to me. So there was, yeah, a connection to the Native Americans. And I feel that way, but it becomes more impounded when you know that someone else outside of yourself is giving you that information that you yourself have an inkling about.
Right, right.
So it confirmed it, yeah.
Adam, we'll take another time out. When we come back, I do want to speak to you about your ancestors, your search for your ancestors, and the documentary Forgotten. Adam Gell stays with us. Back with more in a moment.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Adam Gell stays with us. Retired high school physical education teacher, healer. And we're talking about the Akashic Record, past lives. So your ancestors are Russian, but your grandfather wasn't initially who you thought he was. Tell me about that journey, and then we'll get into the making of the documentary Forgotten.
As a seven-year-old in Brooklyn, I would frequently visit my grandmother, who was about a block and a half away, after my family traumas and you know, arguments and the stuff we mentioned a little bit before. So as a seven-year-old going to my grandmother, I would ride my bike or I'd run to her house and knock on her door. She'd say, come up, and I'd come up and she'd serve me food. But along with serving me food, she would wind up taking out these photo albums from 1930, 1940. And this was 1970 as I was a kid in Brooklyn. And as I was skimming through the photo albums, I'd come across of a man in a military uniform. And I would see the photos of these people with fur hats and felt boots and snowy landscape scenes. But when I saw the photo of the man in the military uniform, I was taken back because at age 7 or 8, I was interested in Army and, you know, there was still, you know, playing with my friends. And when I asked my grandmother who this man was, she said, it's your grandfather. But it didn't look like the grandfather that I knew who she was married to. And I was could see it. So I went home to my father and I said to my father, Dad, did you know your father was a soldier? And he said, leave me alone. I don't want to talk about that. So as a 7-year-old, hearing that, that made it more intriguing for me to actually store that in the back of my conscience mind and eventually want to find out about it. So as I visited my grandmother more frequently, I would go to her cupboard, you know, her photo where she had the photo albums in one of the drawers in the bedroom. And I was drawn to this particular photo. I kept looking at the man in the military uniform. And she would say, what are you doing? And I would say, no, I'm looking at the pictures. And I close it and close the drawer and I'd leave, you know, after I ate. And as I was getting older, I'd ask her a little more questions. And she told me that that was my father's biological father who was killed in World War II. And she saw him for the last time in a village that she took a train to. It was called Sverdlovsk, which was, I don't know what town it is now in Russia. And he was in the military college. So she visited him for the last time. And then that was the last time she saw him. She started to cry. She told me he was a school teacher prior to the war and that they met while she was in the hospital as a midwife. She told me a little bit about my present grandfather, who was a Jewish refugee who, when the Germans occupied Warsaw during the 1939, the Polish Jews who wanted to leave were taken by the Russians to the different camps up in northern Russia. And that was the present grandfather that I knew, who she actually married after. But to make a long story short, skip 40 years later, as I get divorced, I realize the remnants or the memory of this man, this soldier, came back into my memory and said, what happened to him? And I wasn't seeing my children and, you know, the divorce separated us. And I wondered to myself what this man felt having lost his life. My father, you know, lived on, but his name changed, you know, because my grandmother remarried. And so when my grandmother died in 2001, I found her whole load of photos, photo albums, and then I found a diary in there. And in the diary, it was in her native Komi language, which was an indigenous language that the people spoke in the Komi Republic, which is about an hour and a half north of Moscow. It was written in the Cyrillic Russian letters, but it wasn't in Russian itself. So I brought it actually to work. And I showed people and they said, this is the Russian letters, but it's not Russian words. So what I had to do is I had to take these diaries and I had to make copies of them. And I found in my grandmother's trunk of all the photo albums an address. And I sent copies of it and I wrote it to whoever it was. And I said, this is the grandson of Lydia. And I have found her diaries. Is there anyone who could translate these? They were from 1938 all the way to 1951. Sure enough, about a month later, I get a response and they actually translate him. It was her niece who was 80 years old. She translated all the diaries into Russian, and then I had them from Russian translated into English. And when I read the diaries, I was so moved and touched. First of all, what they endured during the war, my grandfather going off to war, as she had explained to me as a child, and the last time that she saw him, she wrote that in the diary. And so that was so compounded at the fact that she told me that as a kid, and then I saw it now written. And there were photos that actually represented that I saw in those photo albums that corresponded to the entries in the diary. She wrote about when war took place, when Hitler attacked Russia. And to make the most profound probably entry was the day that she found out that he died. And she wrote about this, you know, the person who I endure and love the most has left this earth and has left the son behind, which was my father. And your soul will always be remembered. And then it was his paper from the front that he was killed. And that was in there. And so that was like a military document that actually had his name and the place he was killed. So to make a long story, yeah.
Wow. Was that Stalingrad? Was he killed at Stalingrad or?
He was killed 3 hours west of Moscow in Smolensk in the Battle of Moscow. The Battle of Moscow was the last battle that was just prior to the Germans were close to Moscow within miles of Moscow. And then the Russians pushed them back. The Germans came again, and then the Russians pushed them back. He was in that second front pushing the Germans back. He was in a ski battalion division, which was like the special forces who wore white outfits. They were called the White, I forgot the name of them. They were dressed in white and camouflage. And so what happened was I actually wrote the archives with this information of where he was killed. And some of the people in Brooklyn who I was sending off, like Western Union, they said, don't even bother. You're not going to get your money. You're not going to get any results. Sure enough, I wrote it and nothing happened. But I happened to find an email and someone in Moscow got back to me and said, I will look for your grandfather. Sure enough, found my grandfather where he was killed and where he was buried. And I made a trip to Russia eventually. I found his family and I put together a documentary film on the subject.
Forgotten,
yes.
How do we see that?
Yeah, well, I have it on YouTube. It's on my YouTube channel. You can see it that way. It's about an hour long. It played in the film festivals here in New Jersey and in New York. It was a pretty touching film. You know, my father actually, he winds up actually going back into the past in the film and shares his innermost, you know, stresses and traumas that he experienced to actually, you know, to make him actually remember his father. And it helped me because it helped resolve some of the issues I was feeling through the divorce, but it was also helped me resolve to understand my trauma from childhood that my father, what he was suffering from, and he wasn't in touch with it and didn't understand it. But my journey put him on the path to better understand and appreciate where he came from and to better understand who his father was.
It's almost as if the making of that film was kind of a temporal version of the Akashic Record.
Yeah, yes. That's very interesting.
Because you went on that journey, you took your father on that journey. He wasn't accessing the Akashic Record in order to come to terms with his trauma, but you sort of laid it out for him.
Well, I think you said it well. I think that when we go back and we have the courage to go back to the traumas that we experience, but the people in our lives who don't have the courage and we are able to show them the path, I think we open up the door for healing. And I think that's what I think our soul needs, some friction in order for it to grow. If we just came into this life with no issues or no problems, we wouldn't evolve. You know, you need to sandpaper yourself in order to refine it and to smoothen it out. And I think these particular incidents that I went through actually shaped my soul. So as you said earlier, in terms of my appearance or how I speak and where I come from, but basically what I experienced was more on a soul level than on a physical level. I mean, on the external world. Yeah, it was almost a journey of me having to go back to uncover my family's ancestry, to figure out where I came from, to know that You don't have to be a famous person in order to be remembered. You don't have to have a monument or a statue named after you to be a person who's remembered. We're all individuals. We all suffer through our own traumas and journeys, and not everybody knows about them. And so we have to figure them out, I think, and try to go back a little bit, you know, to do that.
At the end of that journey, if there is ever an end to such a journey, but what state of mind was your father in after he, you know, relived that or learned about it?
Well, I think the older we get and the more we then delve into our past, I think it becomes more difficult because I think we're set in our ways. And I think that for him, he's in his 80s now, but this was about four years ago, going back actually to the house that he actually came here as he immigrated, you know, from Europe in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. I took him back actually to the apartment and I filmed in the apartment. And when he walked in, he couldn't believe it. And then he cried. And then eventually he sat on the steps perplexed. He was trying to put everything together. He just like sat there in his own world looking down and not defeated, but I guess traumatized almost to actually have to go back, which he wanted to, but also knew he'd probably suffer some type of feelings that were going to be difficult for him to digest.
And when he came through that, did he find peace? Has he found peace?
Well, yeah, he told me, you know, he said, you know, I'm so grateful and I respect you so much for doing this for me and for the family. Because I wouldn't know where to start. And, you know, if you watch the film, you get to see why he didn't want to do it and what happened, which made him turn away from actually looking at his past.
How did it change your relationship with your father?
Well, I have a deeper understanding for one's own suffering and one's own pain. And sometimes we sometimes run away from the people that hurt us. And sometimes we want to avoid them. But sometimes we have to actually go through it rather than around it. And it made our relationship a lot stronger. I think when people get older, we somehow let down our guard, so to speak, of how we might have been hurt or wounded from certain people in our lives. But we know that life is not forever. And so I think it brought us a lot closer together. It certainly brought me closer to him and I would say vice versa.
And for your grandfather, who obviously passed, you know, more than 80 years ago, is that process that you went through with your father, the making the film, remembering, investigating, does that affect, even though his soul is departed, does that affect his soul journey at all, do you think?
Actually, speaking to other people who are in a spiritual world in terms of having a deeper understanding for this, a lot of them said that you cleared up the karma of the whole line, the male line of what existed, the fact that you put to rest a lot of the stuff. In other words, I was able to tell the story. I was able to investigate what happened and then have a better understanding and then actually change my story. Because a lot of times in our lives, we receive the unconscious story that's passed down from generation to generation. And when we delve into the story and find the traumas and the setbacks, we somehow clear away those traumas and help help yourself, but you also help future generations, because you're clearing away not only the karmic energy, but you're clearing away all the different memories and experiences that people had by just acknowledging them.
Remarkable, remarkable. What's next for you, Adam?
Well, I'm working on a book, actually, that relates to the story of how I became interested in the subject that we're speaking about today, and actually speaking more a little bit more deeper into the story or the history of my family and how it's so important for us to research or to find our ancestry and to understand what took place on both the male and the female side. So I'm looking for a title which is probably going to be called Telling His Story, which is, you know, everybody has a story. And what makes one special over the next is the ability to be able to share the most intricate parts of one's world, where everybody, it's relatable, where people are afraid to talk about it, but someone's not.
Again, the podcast, how do we listen and watch?
That's on YouTube, Conversations with Adam Gellin, Inspiring Minds. I usually do an interview maybe once a week, or you know, maybe twice a month, I would say, you know, on a more reasonable level. I also do my healing work. I do the Akashic Record readings. I have many clients that contact me looking to enhance their soul's growth. And actually, I have also the shamanic practitioner work, which I clear out people's energy. And what I'm really looking to do is actually help them. I have a program called the Masculine Balance, which is helping men find the traumas in their lives and help them balance the masculine and the feminine qualities that they have so that they become whole. Just as in shamanic work, you know, you have the male and you have the female energies, and they have to blend together, so to speak, in order to be, you know, a complete human.
Is this all done online, remotely?
The Masculine Balance is done remotely. The Akashic Records is remotely. And the shamanic work I can do in person, or I could do Reiki works, you know, energetic work via the computer, via Zoom or a personal meeting.
And they can get a hold of you through the website, AdamGelUniverseHealing.com.
Yeah, universalhealing.com, yes.
Universal Healing, my apologies.
That's
Adam
okay.
Gell, universalhealing.com. And again, the link can be found in the episode notes. Adam, what a great pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure being here.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at strangeplanetpodcast.com.